Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
European Commission Vice President Maros Sefcovic unveiled new proposals last evening to reduce by 80% the checks on goods from Britain destined for Northern Ireland. Now, the response from the UK government and from the political parties in Northern Ireland could be described as mixed. EU Commissioner for Financial Services, Mairead McGuinness, joins me now to discuss this. Good morning, Commissioner.
Very good morning, Claire.
So we'll start with the question of why we got to this point. There's a question this week over whether the UK ever really intended to honour the protocol that they signed up to in the first place. This is what DUP MP Ian Paisley Jr. told Newsnight on the BBC last night.
Boris Johnson did tell me personally that he would, after agreeing to the protocol, he would sign up to changing that protocol and indeed tearing it up. That this was just for the semantics. Now, that comment has been verified by another source much closer to Boris Johnson within his own government. So the fact of the matter is, I do believe that the government didn't really want this to happen to Northern Ireland and they took a short-term bet.
So what do you make of that claim?
Yeah, I saw that last night and it was certainly a very interesting comment coming on the back of our proposals. I think we have to take it as true because it's been said and I presume it could be stood over, but I don't think we need to dwell on it. I think there has been a lot of discussion about good faith, bad faith between negotiators. But I mean, our priority today after the announcement by Maros Sefcovic yesterday is to sit down for the next whatever it takes to sort this out for the people of Northern Ireland and for the businesses in Northern Ireland. I mean, I would say on reflection that certainly our instinct over, you know, the many months since Brexit effectively happened and the protocol piece hasn't been implemented in the way we thought it would. We certainly thought that the UK weren't quite compliant with what they had signed up to. That might speak towards the statement that the Prime Minister maybe had no intention to implement it. But I suppose from our side, we had every intention to honour our side of the bargain and we would expect that of the British government.
OK, but in fairness to the British government and to the British Prime Minister, he probably thought, well, I can get more out of these guys here. And look at what he managed to get. 80% of the checks gone.
Well, look, I mean, in fairness to all of us, there was a problem because Brexit created problems for many sectors, particularly it created problems in Northern Ireland as to how do you resolve the issue of the Good Friday Agreement, no border, single market. So almost a problem that couldn't be solved, which is why it took a while to reach a settled situation signed up to in good faith by both parties. The problem has been, I think, a belief that, look, if we do nothing, it'll all go away. What we've been engaged in, and it really intensified when Maros Sefcovic went to Northern Ireland himself and listen to people and businesses, but we've been engaged in trying to understand the problem. So is it a problem about bad implementation? Are there genuine issues for businesses, large and small? Can we resolve those within the frame of the protocol? And we've always said we would do that. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, I think it came, and I think it's a very good package done in really good faith with the people of Northern Ireland in mind. And I think if we keep people and businesses in Northern Ireland in our front of our mind, then I think we will come to a good solution.
But do you see my point that, the British are always accused of being untrustworthy and not sticking to their word? The EU put all of these tiresome, disruptive measures in place from a British perspective, right? Only to remove them when the going gets tough.
Well, I wouldn't agree with the analysis, even if it was coming from the British. I mean, we could say in return, and I don't want to be small-minded, that, you know, the big obstacle was Brexit. In other words, when the referendum was happening, and God knows in 2016, the fact that we're even talking about this is crazy, but we are. But when it was happening, nobody thought about Northern Ireland, and the people of Northern Ireland and the businesses did not have a voice because the Assembly wasn't functioning. So we have a very delicate situation in Northern Ireland. The European Union came with this proposal, which the British government, you know, absolutely accepted. So a really good situation for Northern Ireland, access to the European single market, of course, access to the UK market, no question, but access, you know, this is incredible offer. What we've done now is we've looked at the practical, if you like, the nitty gritty. So goods going directly to Northern Ireland for consumption in Northern Ireland, we can remove a lot of the checks, the customs issue around those, but we can't remove a Brexit effect. And I think the Brexit effect for Northern Ireland, if we do this well, based on what we've proposed, will be a Brexit bonus for Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at the reaction, you said absolutely, Claire, it's mixed, as I would expect it to be. But look at the voices from business. They don't normally shout and they don't get headlines because in a way they're kind of caught, I suppose, don't want to offend anyone politically. But they're looking at this and saying, this is a move in the right direction. This really will help us free up a lot of the problems we're experiencing. It will take the tension out of the political debates which are happening around all of this. I mean, there's really a very, very good basis for very practical solutions for people and businesses.
And yet you've David Frost saying that he wants the European Court of Justice off the scene in Northern Ireland. You have Ian Paisley Jr. saying that what has happened falls well short of what they expect and what they need to see happen. So there is a risk that this will not be accepted.
Well, look, I think that sometimes the longer you live, the more you don't, nothing surprises me. So when you quote various people, I wouldn't have expected anything other than, you know, hard lines from some who take a different view to the European Union, to the impact of Brexit. So that's not a surprise. The test will be that when those sit around the table, Lord Frost and my colleagues, that they will put all of the rhetoric that has happened up to now outside the door and concentrate on the solutions that are there. I mean, I know that in Paisley Jr. spoke last night also about, you know, quite critically that Europe had presented the protocol as, you know, like the Ten Commandments written in stone. And if I can be biblical in return, maybe we all need to turn the other cheek and move on. And rather than us constantly trying to find a way to critique each other, go into the room and find solutions. I mean, there are all sorts of talk about Christmas being, impacted by shortages in the United Kingdom, and it looks quite serious. I would like to think we'd all have a good Christmas and that we would look back on 2021, you know, including a horrible pandemic, which has not left us either, which is alarming, but that we would look back and say, look, that Brexit issue is now solved and Northern Ireland can reap the rewards of its very unique position. And I think that's the prize.
But it is hard for the DUP to turn the other cheek when you have the EU ambassador to the UK, who was also on the BBC last night, and he was saying that Northern Ireland's access to the single market will be put at risk if rulings of the ECJ are ignored or rejected. I mean, is that the case that the EU would kick Northern Ireland out of the single market if that were to happen?
No, I think that's, you know, not, I mean, pull back a little bit here. I mean, and when you say it's hard to turn the other cheek, it's hard for everybody in the negotiation to compromise. And that's what we're talking about here. When it comes to the court, I mean, it is in the interest of Northern Ireland that their place in the single market is protected by the ECJ. For some reason, the ECJ is suggestive of being the bogeyman, but the ECJ is the protector of the single market to which Northern Ireland would have unique access and privileged access and needs to get to use that access, which is why we have unlocked this proposal. So coming back to your point, Claire, about a mixed reaction, in my mind, that's a good place for us to be.
OK, but this was the EU. This was the EU ambassador to the UK saying that if the ECJ is rejected or ignored, that the outcome could be that Northern Ireland is kicked from the single market.
Yeah, but I don't understand why. I mean, sometimes hypothetical questions are put to people and you give an answer, but there would be no reason why that would arise. You know, we shouldn't play or create scenarios that cause us problems. I mean, I use the old phrase, there are those who will find problems in every solution. We are finding solutions with solutions. And therefore, the hypothetical situation of what if and when, and if it rains, you know, is there going to be a leak? We would probably deal with Brexit for the rest of my days. But let us try at this moment, this particular point in time in October 2021, long since a referendum, use the opportunity of these last few weeks of this year to resolve the difficulties which are genuine in Northern Ireland and which the Commission heard. We absorbed Maroš Šefčovič. He worked really hard with member states and the European Parliament to come on board with this very decisive, comprehensive package to ease the tensions and the burdens. And I think we've achieved a huge amount yesterday, but we're going to work with the UK. And there's going to be a lunch here between David Frost and Maroš Šefčovič. So sometimes they'll probably read about each other and what they've said in the papers, but they'll talk to each other as human beings, as negotiators, on behalf of people in Northern Ireland. And again, I repeat that, if we lose sight of why we're doing this, then I think we will create other problems.
On the specific issue of the European Court of Justice, is there a compromise available on that?
But you see, again, Claire, I mean, it's been put out there as if there's a need for a compromise. I'm putting it to you. In my view, the Court of Justice is there to protect the single market.
That's not how David Frost sees it, it would appear.
Well, I mean, he hasn't read my speech, perhaps, and I've read his. I mean, I respect Lord Frost makes all sorts of comments. That's his right and duty, perhaps. But my understanding of the single market and the European Court of Justice is they go hand in hand. And where Northern Ireland is a full, you know, access to the single market, will want to make sure that the single market is protected. And I think the United Kingdom, when they fully think through this, will see that this is not an imposition on UK law. This is a protection for the single market to which part of the UK has access to. So like every problem, yeah, it depends on if you want to make it worse or you want to actually find a solution or a way of thinking which doesn't address it as a burden.
Okay. Were you surprised then when you read David Frost's speech to see that the ECJ had become an issue?
No, I've long past been surprised about anything, in many things, particularly in Brexit. So no, I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, it was a fascinating speech. I presume you read it, Claire. I didn't know, for example, that Princess, I hope I get her name correctly, Isabella, that the Duke of Burgundy in 1428, he wanted to marry her, not for love, but for actually politics, for geopolitics. So we've moved a fair bit since 1428. But where we haven't moved is the reality of today, mm-hmm, and our duty and responsibility to Northern Ireland, its unique position, its vulnerabilities. And I respect all of the views of those who take a different view than I have. I've always done that in my work in the European Parliament. I worked really well with Diane Dodds when she was here at the DUP. I have full respect for her position. Yeah. So, what I think is hugely important is that we don't allow the baggage of yesterday's headlines to impede progress on this package.
The ECJ as an issue, though, when you read the speech, was that the first time you were aware that they had a problem with it?
Well, I suppose it was referenced, I think, in the command paper. But look, if you only pick out what the problems are, you would actually drown in sorrow because you think there are no solutions. Every day we wake up here at EU level, there's a problem to be solved and we work towards solving it. This has taken longer because in a way, I suppose the British approach initially on implementation of the protocol, they just didn't implement and they didn't inform people of what it actually was that they had signed up to. So I think that's really, really important. So when it comes to commitments made, they then try to resile on some of those commitments, which naturally caused concern amongst member states and here in the Commission and indeed the European Parliament. So we have to have tough words with one another. But, you know, you can't keep having tough words without making progress. Mm-hmm. And I hope that people see yesterday as a genuine effort and a significant step towards that vital progress we need.
I was reading Pat Leahy in the Irish Times this morning and he was saying that his sources, officials, say to him in the Irish government that their strong suspicion is that David Frost and Boris Johnson keep stirring the pot here for domestic political reasons. What do you think?
Well, I suppose that's been I don't think that's something that has just been thought of recently. There is that sense, perhaps, that Brexit is being used.
But I suppose what he's saying is that there's going to be no pleasing these people.
Well, I can't accept that. If I did, then I have to just close the door and go home. We can't accept that you can't make progress. I mean, over time we do and we will. But to the point of where Brexit has certainly been in the news since 2016 and hopefully not much beyond this year, there was that sense that perhaps it is maybe a way of pulling the Conservative Party and those who voted for it together, united against Europe. And part of Lord Frost's speech, if you look at it, is certainly, you know, pointing towards division rather than unity. But to the point where we would allow that impede our better judgment to find a solution for Northern Ireland, I think would be wrong. Mm-hmm. To say that the Irish are pessimistic, look, it's not my sense. I mean, it depends sometimes on what you've read. Your immediate reaction is often the best kept to yourself. And that's why sometimes it's much better to reflect the day after than the day of.
Pessimistic and perhaps wary, but also warning others to be wary too. I'm sure you're aware of the Taoiseach's comments yesterday on Morning Ireland when Leo Varadkar said that all other parts of the world need to be very careful here about making a deal with the British because you need to be sure you can trust these people.
Yeah, I think that was on foot of the Dominic Cummings series of tweets, which I haven't fully digested, but they're always from Dominic Cummings, you know, full on. So in relation to the Taoiseach's comments, I mean, you could only but support what he said. I mean, it's no secret that if there is a sense that the United Kingdom was not willing to fulfil its commitments under an international treaty, I dare say we wouldn't have to ask the rest of the world to look. They see it already, and they may be going like, oh, this is an interesting development. And if they're sitting down to talk, they will need copper-fastened guarantees. So I think that, you know, sometimes you have to say harsh things to your neighbours and friends. It's not to offend. It is merely to inform. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, the UK position, which is global Britain, and of course we wish them well because their wealth will be our success as well. We're all joined together. But, you know, the fanciful idea that in this globalised world where climate change and energy crisis are to the fore and the pandemic hasn't gone away, global anything will not succeed without working with global everyone. Yeah, so I think that in a sense, it's a question of identity in the UK, which is linked to Brexit.
But what people will see is that their reward for resiling from an international treaty is concession and big concessions at that.
I think what people will see is the capacity of the European Union to honour our commitments on the protocol. So the protocol remains, but working night and day to find solutions because they are important to people and business in Northern Ireland. You can call that compromise. You can say capitulation. Frankly, I don't care what you call it. If it works for business and communities in Northern Ireland, allows them prosper, grow and live in peace, that's a huge prize. So I can take the slings and arrows of debate and, you know, name calling. But at the end of the day, if we can look back, Maroš Šefčovič, this College of Commissioners, and say we did good work in 2021 with our UK colleagues, we found a solution where we would both be able to live with and manage, and that Northern Ireland going into 2022 has certainty and stability. That's a huge prize. So call me what you will, I'll live with it, but I want to get to that point.
Commissioner, thank you very much for joining us this morning.